have a combined effort. And we also see this increasingly in practice at this moment, that a lot of farms, they go and implement a set of measures rather than a single measure, that this is really most effective in raising the bar if you talk about biosecurity standards.
It's time for a new era of communication in the swine industry, one that you can get the latest updates while commuting or driving to farms. Here, you will have the brightest minds of the global swine industry in your pocket. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
MS Gold, the best hygiene products in livestock farming.
MetaFarms, transforming agriculture with data-driven solutions for pork producers. SUNY, we provide value-added biotech solutions. Eastman works with you to accelerate your nutritional program innovation. Anatox, research shows that feed sanitizers reduce the onset of viruses in commercial swine feed. Improve swine productivity through powerful pathogen control with Anatox today. FeedFlow, feed is too expensive to ignore. Take control with FeedFlow.
Hello, and welcome to the Swine It Podcast. I'm Dr. Tara Donovan, your host today. And I'd like to introduce our guest, Dr. Joost van den Born. Dr. van den Born is a professor at HAS University of Applied Sciences and manager of research and development for the Shippers Group. Welcome to our show, Dr. van den Born. How are you today?
Thank you. I'm fine. Thanks for having me.
Great. Well, Dr. van den Born has expertise in new product development in the areas of farm hygiene and biosecurity, nutrition, digestion, and health. So before we get into that, I'd like to have him introduce us a little bit more about his background and how he got to where he is today. Could you do that for us?
Yeah, thank you. I will give it a try at least. Yes, my name is Joost. I've been trained as an animal nutritionist and also as a physiologist. Did my master at Wageningen University in the Netherlands. I graduated on the topic of dietary fiber in energy metabolism in growing and finishing pigs. Then this was followed up with a PhD also at Wageningen University on nutrient synchrony in growing pigs and milk-fed calves with Professor Martin Verstegen and with Professor Walter Gerrits. I also worked on research projects in that time in collaboration with Lund University in Sweden and also with the Swedish Agricultural University and in Scotland at the Rowett Research Institute. After my PhD, I've been working as a researcher and an assistant professor at Wageningen University for a bit over 7 years. There I have been focusing on interactions between health and welfare and nutrition and physiology. I've been working with pigs, but also with calves, poultry and dairy cows. And one of the larger projects I've been working in with PhD students and also with a postdoc student dealt with effects of sanitary status on nutrient requirements. And that also drove me to the next position, which was at Royal Friesland Campina, which I joined. That's one of the bigger European dairy companies. And there I had the opportunity to work on product and concept development at their innovation center at Wageningen campus. And since 2016, I've been working for the Shippers Group, where I'm leading the research and development department and also the regulatory affairs team. And since 2018, I'm affiliated with Haas University of Applied Sciences, where I'm leading a research team with researchers from different backgrounds.
Want to save up to 25% in labor time when cleaning your barns? With MS Top Foam Power, you effectively remove all historical pollution. MS Top Foam Power ensures the surface is perfectly clean and ready for disinfection. Find your dealer at www.msgold.eu.
Great. Well, thank you for that. It sounds like you have a lot of expertise in this area, so I'm excited to get to know a little bit more about what you've been doing. So one of the things that I noticed in your areas of expertise that I want to just dig into a little bit is your experience in reducing antimicrobial use in pig farming. So this is the Swine It podcast. So we're going to focus a little bit here on the swine side of things. And so tell me a little bit about your efforts in that, you know, leading a project or, and I'm sure just a career full of that as it's not a new topic, right, for us in the industry.
No. I can explain a bit more on that. Talking from the Dutch perspective, because that's what I've been working from. In the Netherlands, we have a quite a densely populated country with about 100 million chickens, with more than 11 million pigs, and with 4 million cattle. Next to about 18 million people, it's quite crowded in a very small country, which is about 240 times smaller than the United States. And this gives a lot of issues if you talk about livestock production. And I typically classify these issues in different categories. One of the categories has to do with environmental concerns. Then you may think about nitrogen, phosphorus, a potassium cycle, CO2 footprint, land use, water use, emissions, biodiversity. That's one topic of concern we are working on. The other one has to do with health, and that's where the antibiotic resistance comes in. But also you may think about zoonotic diseases and air quality. And the third pillar that we have been working on has to do with animal welfare. Then it's about natural behavior of animals. It's about animal health. It's about invasive measures in the animal industry, but it's also about transparency and about perception. What's happening in our industry. And the last and fourth pillar that we usually try to identify has to do with the economics and the economic feasibility of our production systems. So in our work, we have been working on all those four pillars, but we have had a specific interest in reducing antimicrobial use in the Dutch pig sector. Because let's say about 15 years ago, the Netherlands was one of the countries in Europe with the highest use of antimicrobials in pigs or in farm animals in general, because that's how it was expressed. So there was quite a big pressure to reduce the use of antibiotics. And therefore, a lot of different efforts were taken. One of it was focusing on biosecurity measures and developing new products and new concepts to help farmers to work without large amounts of antimicrobials. Maybe I can take you a bit back to 2009 in the Netherlands, where this was a time when a task force was installed and also an action plan was taken. And the task force was named the Netherlands Veterinary Medicines Institute. And basically there were four important measures taken. One of it was a very detailed monitoring of the antimicrobial use at herd level. The second was the monitoring system for antimicrobial resistance. The third one was a clear separation of the responsibilities of veterinarians and of farmers. And this also included benchmarking. So it meant that both veterinarians, but also the farms, they were classified as, let's say, a red, an orange or a green category based on how they performed with using antimicrobials relative to the reference. And the fourth had to do with this introduction of farm treatment plans and farm health plans. And especially those farm health plans were quite new for the Dutch pig industry, because usually we were used to treat animals when they were ill. And the health plans stimulated farmers, but also stimulated other people, other stakeholders in the industry to work on preventive measures. And that's where I got involved. First, I got involved from the nutritional side. There we've done studies with pigs under different sanitary conditions. And the questions we were trying to answer was, do pigs under different sanitary conditions also need different diets, and specifically different protein composition and protein levels in their diet? So that's one of the reasons why we focused on specific amino acids like tryptophan, threonine and methionine to see if the need for those amino acids were increased under lower sanitary conditions, so when more infections were present. And from these studies that we have been working on also at Wageningen University, I also got the idea that typically we always think in nutritional sciences, we think in husbandry, housing conditions, and we think in genetics. And a lot of effort and research is put in these three pillars. And if you are very well able to manage these three pillars, you could efficiently produce animal protein in also in pig production. But mainly this preventive measures to control biosecurity and to reduce infections in the pig industry has stimulated me to continue working into this direction and to also work on concepts and on methods to reduce pathogen exposure in pigs on the one hand and to increase resilience of the animals in the others.
Yeah, you what you mentioned is really what I spent a lot of my time on is preventing disease. I mean, what we noticed is if a pig herd has an infectious disease, the use of antimicrobials, right, goes up enormously. And so yeah. preventing the entry of pathogens, whether that's, in a variety of different ways, helps to reduce the antimicrobial use. You don't always put those two together, but, absolutely they go hand in hand. And so what's the biosecurity measure that you've seen make the most impact, or what are the fundamentals of that for a herd? And
I think you just mentioned the entry of pathogens. I think indeed this is all, of course, the classical way how to think about biosecurity, about entry and exit of pathogens in the system. But I think what has driven me a lot over the past few years is especially also the internal biosecurity and how you can control the spread of pathogens within a farm. And for me and also for the studies I've been working on, both from university side as well as from the company perspective, I think mainly the integrative approach of combining different measures has given the most impact in practice. So I think basically the solution of reducing antimicrobial use is not in a single product. It's not in a single solution. It's a kind of concerted effort that you need to make at different pillars. Maybe I can give you one example. When I started working at the Shippers Group, it was the first time when we bought our own experimental farm. And in this farm, which was a classical farm of about 10 years old, we basically split this farm in two. One part of the farm was kept as it was, and the other part of the farm, a number of different biosecurity measures were implemented. Basically, five important measures were taken. One is creating a germ-free or a low germ environment by having very strict cleaning and disinfection procedures, but also creating pore-free surfaces by using coatings so that it's much easier to clean the surface in those barns. The third pillar was to reduce the pests in the farm, so not only rodent control but also insect control. Clean drinking water was the fourth pillar, so having microbiologically but also physically, chemically high quality drinking water. And the fifth pillar was what we call optimal care, and that may have to do with supplementing organic acids via drinking water to increase the resilience of the animals. And what we have seen is that if you have a combined effort, and we also see this increasingly in practice at this moment, that a lot of farms they go and implement a set of measures rather than a single measure, that this is really most effective in raising the bar if you talk about biosecurity standards.
Explore MetaFarms for all your livestock production data needs. Experience our integrated software platform offering complete operational visibility from breed to market. Utilize customizable dashboards for data analysis and benchmarking. MetaFarms mobile apps enable offline access, maximizing efficiency and enhancing profitability. Visit us today at MetaFarms.
Very interesting. So what did you see in this farm? You said you have one farm that was kind of the area that you changed a lot of really sanitation and hygiene, right, is what I heard. And the other farm was the benchmark, left it the same. And what did you see? And how long did it take for those? I guess one is how did you measure it? And two, you know, what were the results?
Yeah. First, what we did measure is, or maybe one step back, what we did do in those farms is if we had a batch of pigs being delivered to the farm, we equally split one half of the pigs to one part of one and the other half to the other, so that we could have a control and a treatment group, so to say. In this case, our primary interest was in reducing antimicrobial use. And that's something that we saw already quite rapidly. So within a few months, we saw the use of antimicrobials decreasing. But we also saw the technical performance at the same time was improved, especially the feed conversion ratio decreased. We saw that we had studies where we collected saliva, collected blood samples of the pigs. And therefore, we also saw the prevalence of some diseases were lower. And we had a specific research on hepatitis E in pigs. And there we also saw a lower prevalence in the, the high sanitary status part of the farm compared to the lower sanitary status. We have done this trial for 2.5 years, so continuously throughout 2.5 years we collected data, we've been taking samples, and later on we also had other farms in practice adopting this approach. And there we also saw some other things. We saw, for example, one farm where you had a very high health level in the farm, that for this farm where it was previously not possible to keep pigs with long tails, so without tail ducking, at some point it appeared to be possible, of course, together with a number of other measures, with adequate feed and with some enrichment materials, but this farm also could use this as a kind of basis to build on for quitting tail ducking. And that's a trial which is still going on, by the way.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That's the next frontier, right? It's not surprising that there's less illness and better growth, but in order to improve the welfare and some of the the areas that you know we need to continue to work on in terms of housing, space, tails, etc., you have to start with the basics, right? So that's really intriguing.
Yeah, that's also a bit how I see it. I see it as kind of establishing the basis, and this also allows to reduce the antibiotics, and still, I think each animal has the right to receive antibiotics when it needs it, of course, because we have seen also in this period, in the very early period, when there was a very strong focus on reducing antimicrobial use, we've also seen that some farms were using too less antibiotics in the Netherlands. And you could see that in slaughterhouses, if you look at the quality of the lungs, for example, in some batches of pigs, that it was simply it had been at the expense of the health of the animals, and that's of course also not desirable.
Yeah, then you get into the food safety aspect of that, right? Which you know we won't cover today, but you know another area that is impacted that you know maybe we weren't didn't think about in the beginning of the ban or restriction of antimicrobials. So there is a use for them, and there's a place for them to continue to be, in our production systems. But I want to go back really quick to how did you economic wise, is there some ways to encourage farmers that use these products for cleaning, put more effort and time into sanitation and hygiene, and it'll pay off in the end? And so how do you go about doing that? And maybe there's some figures from this project that you can share with us.
Yeah, I think that's one of the key questions that you're asking right now. Because basically it's about behavior. And if you ask how to change behavior of farmers or employees, that's a very tricky thing, because you need to put effort in something which, at least for your own or in your own perception, may not directly pay off. And that's something which is very challenging. And I may give a few examples maybe. What we have been doing is putting a lot of effort in raising the level of knowledge and stimulating motivation of farmers. And we've been doing that this basically in a number of ways, I think. One of it is to educate, so simply to explain and to show, so to demonstrate the possibilities there are. And the nice thing is that at some point, if there are a few ambassadors who have experienced it themselves, then you see that the word easily spreads. The second thing is to make things visible which were not or which were less visible previously, like taking samples, like having monitoring systems in place to also evaluate the quality of implementation of several biosecurity measures at the farm, which also allows benchmarking of farms. We have set up, for example, what we call a high check, a hygiene check, in which farmers can evaluate the quality of the drinking water or evaluate the quality of the cleaning process in their farm. And this also stimulates people. And we see this, happening also with some larger integrators which have, for example, 20 or 30 different farms. If you apply this methodology at the different farms, you also see that it can be used to stimulate each other. Because at one farm, things may go a bit better. They can learn from each other. And by doing this, we also created a kind of community. Of course, in the Netherlands, this is relatively easy because we are a small country. So it's also easy to get them physically together, this community. But by talking about it, by cross-fertilizing, so to say, farmers can learn a lot from each other as well. And in my opinion, this wasn't really common to talk about these kind of things, but if you create the opportunity for that, we have seen that farmers can learn a lot from each other. And the last example I would like to give is to make the application of specific measures a bit easier. Because we see that, for example, with cleaning agents, we have been stimulating the use of cleaning agents a lot because, in our opinion, cleaning is very important in the farm, also prior to disinfection. First of all, we see that cleaning reducing the number of pathogens even more than disinfection does. But cleaning is also instrumental for allowing disinfectants to do their job. Because if you do not have a proper cleaning process, and if you still have a lot of organic material left, then the disinfectants will also not have a high efficacy. So what we have been doing is we also developed a system, which is called a high bag, a hygiene bag, which contains a cleaner. And this always secures the correct application of a cleaning agent. And an accurate dosing compared with traditional systems. But moreover, it also guarantees the safe use by employees because there's no risk of direct contact with chemicals, which is always very, well, I would say almost a dirty job to do in practice because there's always a risk of being or getting in contact with chemicals. And next to that, we see that if you use an application system like that, it saves about 30% in labor time and also a bit less than 30% in water use. So by developing not only, let's say, cleaning agents, but also the application system for using these cleaning agents, it also helps and stimulates farmers to apply these products in practice.
Yeah, that's I'm gonna ask some questions about the application process in a second, but to review what you said is I loved having the ambassador. That's a great name, right? Kind of the leader or the person among the peers that had a success story that can help, you know, get their colleagues' trust. And I did learn one time that, you know, who do we listen to or whose advice do we hear? And you know, our friends and people that we trust is a big one, right? We're gonna follow that path versus, you know, the government or, you know, even a professional or et cetera. It's our colleagues and our friends who we trust. So the ambassador is really key to that. And then I love a healthy competition, right, among producers and farmers. So you start to do some measurements that are objective, right? And it sounds like you have those measurements. And then, you know, not shaming anybody, but kind of comparing them to each other, right? And then, you know, why is this guy so good, you know, or why are these so low? Then they get a little bit of healthy competition never hurts. And I've seen that in other.
I like that phrasing, a healthy competition, because it's very important, I think, that farmers, but also within a farm, employees, if you talk about it, they shouldn't see it as a kind of judgment or something like that. They should see it as, hey, I'm doing a good job. And the focus should be on the rewarding part of the of the job rather than judging it.
Yeah, and how does Jim get such good results when, you know, Bob's aren't as good? Jim, what do you do? You know, tell us what you do, and you can, you know, that's good competition in my mind. So
yeah, for us, what works very well as we have seen is also to involve young people. Of course, we are doing a lot of studies as well in these experiments where we have students taking samples. For example, in farrowing pens, we have had students who take samples at different locations in the pen. For example, close to the drinking nipple, where it's always a very challenging place to clean it very, very well. But if you have those young people who are willing to work in the pig farms later on as well, if you have them involved, they also stimulate the employees in the farm a lot. It also, for me, it was an eye-opener. Yeah.
Yeah, I think younger generations tend to talk things through and do group discussions and include people, right, and talk it through a little bit more than maybe my generation. So no, that's great. So let's talk about this application process, because for me, that's been one of the most challenging things when you have one, you know, so many different products. And then, you know, I'll go to a farm and we'll have a very specific directions written on how to apply. And maybe they don't have the exact same tool, you know, whether it's the thing that connects to the hose or it's a hand spraying pump or, you know, there's so many. Tell me about this process, because I think that's key to getting this done right, is there's a lot of questions. You can use an expensive product the wrong way and not get the results that you want.
Yeah, exactly. And it holds both for underdosing and overdosing, because both happen in practice. Well, what we have been doing is developing dosing systems as well as products. So producing not only the cleaning agents or the disinfectants, but also the dosing systems. And in the beginning, we did this quite much the traditional way. So having a dosing system in which you can have a setting for a cleaning product or a setting for a disinfectant. And then that was already much better than what's happening with a foam lens and with a normal method. But still, we saw that having employees opening the cans, pouring cans, working with chemicals, this also from a health and safety perspective is no longer desirable. And we also see that if you talk about working conditions, not only in the Netherlands or in the Western world, but also in some other countries where we are, we see that this is a big reason for people not being willing to work in the industry anymore. So that's why we worked on developing a kind of bag with a cleaning product, which you can connect directly to a lens, which is also delivered with it. And this guarantees that you always have the right dosage, that you're not yourself in contact with the chemical, and also that you can dispose the bag afterwards, so you do not have to deal with the cans. And this is something which is which has helped us a lot to get like a, let's say, kind of consistent results at farm level, and also for the employees to have very good feedback on the quality of the cleaning process, as well as on the labor and the fun if you do the work, so to say.
Right. Oh, that's good. That's an area that I think we need to continue to work on in terms of different applications for products like that. And yeah, farm safety is even another topic we could spend an entire podcast on or more.
Yeah. But these are developments, I think, that we have to take into account. I mean, we have to deal with labor scarcity, at least in Europe, we see this. So these are aspects that we have to take into account, next to, for example, digitalization that we see. So we also, in our monitoring systems, we try to have more digital tools available also to evaluate the quality of, for example, a cleaning process. And the third important development that I would like to mention is, I already was talking about the chemicals and about reducing chemicals or reducing exposure to chemicals. I think also from an environmental perspective, we see in, at least in the Netherlands and also in some other countries, that there is a pressure of not using certain chemicals anymore, or quite a high pressure from regulation also to move to, let's say, greener alternatives. So these trends and these developments together also stimulate product development. And that's why I think there's still a lot to come in this area. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. And kind of the measuring too. So tell me a little bit about how you measure, the effectiveness of a product or a process. You know, is this a device, or tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's something which has been set for some of the pillars we're working on, but also is still under development for some others. We work with different tools. Sometimes it's an imaging tool, so just taking a photo with a mobile phone, for example, and having this analyzed. But you may also think about ATP measures. You may think about collecting water, evaluating the water based on a validated system. So there are different methods in place that are used for the different pillars. Maybe another example which is nice to measure, nice to mention, is that we are measuring the presence of rodents at farms currently with a movement device. So we have points at the farm where we automatically see if there's any movement. And also by doing that, we can see that at, let's say, if you have a farm with 40 different points of measurement, you see high activity in some of the cages for detecting the rats or the mice. Only then you can apply the rodenticides to kill them, because it's not allowed, at least not in the Netherlands, to use rodenticides from a preventive perspective. So then the farmer can easily see on the app, on his mobile phone, he can see where the visits of the rats and the mice are, or if all boxes are green, then everything is perfect and you do not have to take any action.
Are these like lasers or cameras, or what's the device that's capturing the movement?
It's a sensor. It's a sensor which is there. So the sensor measures the presence of the animals.
Ah, interesting. I did come across another country that wouldn't allow preventative use of rodenticides, which my experience is in the U.S. And so although it's, the products are certainly being looked at and scrutinized more today than they would have been 10 years ago. The not even being able to use them for preventative was new to me. And I saw some damage, of barns and pretty severe. And I thought, what an expensive asset to have these rodents, you know, really destroying and not be able to even prevent it. So that was a new experience for me.
Yeah. Well, these are some of the challenges that we have been facing, and then these type of solutions are to be developed. And we also see that it pays off in the end, because now we have for a number of years we have this ban on use of preventive rodenticides, but you also see in the predators of those mice, for example, in the owls, for example, we see that there's less accumulation of rodenticides compared to a number of years ago. So also from a kind of biodiversity perspective and let's say the damage it can do to other animals, we see that it does pay off. But for the pig farmer, it's a challenge. It has been a challenge and still is a challenge. Yeah.
So, kind of, we're going to round out our discussion here. You know, is there anything else that you want to touch on, or, you know, some take homes that you want to share with us today before we get into, I mean, our last few questions?
I think we've had a nice talk. I think I also realized that the journey that we have taken in the Netherlands, it's maybe a bit different compared to some other countries worldwide. Currently, as a company, we're exporting to 40 plus countries, I think, maybe 50 plus countries. And we see that a lot of developments that we have been facing over the past 10 to 15 years are also popping up in some of the other countries. So for us, it's also a very nice experience to see in other parts of the world how we can help there with developing solutions for the same type of challenges, especially if you see that this antimicrobial resistance challenges still exist and will probably keep on existing for the coming years.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, maybe unfortunate or maybe, you know, maybe good. It depends on how you look at it. You've paved the way a bit, right, for some of the environmental aspects and certainly, you know, the welfare and antimicrobial use. So the experiences are really, you know, golden and sharing those with the rest of the countries that haven't been faced regulatory wise, but will be. And then just, you know, to continue to improve production as well as work on economics, which are, you know, continuing to get challenging. I think those experiences are golden.
Yeah, definitely.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. AccuFast, the best way to predict the future is to create it. Start creating your future today at AccuFastSwine.com. Adiseo provides programs and services to help producers achieve their targets in a high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. Healthy Farms by Bioverse, your manure management experts. Digesterom Finish from DSM Firmenich can help your pigs finish faster, get better efficiency with improved profitability with Digesterom Finish. AB Vista, new nutritional perspectives and novel enzyme applications to drive pig production. Trow Nutrition North America. Everything we do is driven by passion and backed by science. Sunai is a professional solution provider for enzymes, probiotics, and functional additives. We offer customized formulas to target nutritional issues in livestock and maximize the utility of animal feed. Find us at sunai.com, spelled S-U-N-H-Y, for more information.
I'm going to jump into the last few questions. So just to get to know our guests a little bit better, we have a three questions that we ask. And so the first one is, you know, what's a book or a resource? It can be, you know, a group, et cetera, that you use in your area of expertise that you find the most valuable.
Okay, books. Well, there are a few textbooks that are always very helpful to me, but they may be a bit boring. They are just like the principles of biochemistry from Leninger, or nutrition and immune function from Professor Philip Kaldor. I use them a lot. But maybe the most relevant to the field I'm working in, One of the sources is the book from professors Jeroen de Wulf and Philip van Immerseel from Belgium, named Biosecurity in Animal Production and in Veterinary Medicine, which is very nicely describing different biosecurity pillars and how to use different approaches in practice. I think it's a nice book.
Yeah, I have that book, and it is, it's very, you know, instead of just in looking at it in a swine perspective, for me, it helped to open my eyes a little bit on, you know, all biosecurity concepts and methods, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So how about either book or resource that you use for your personal life? So beyond just your area of expertise, what's something that maybe some of our listeners or myself would be interested in?
Maybe one of the books I recently read, and which I also use in teaching, is the book called On Dialogue from David Bohm, who is a quantum physicist. And he is describing how to have a good dialogue with people without having or without forcing a kind of debate. And I use this in education and also in working with students, because at the university I'm working, we have completely different types of students. We have animal science students, often from a farm or closely related to animal production, but we also have environmental scientists and applied biologists, possibly vegetarians, who completely think about livestock production in a different way. And one of the topics I'm teaching and I'm working on with students is also to have a dialogue about the future of livestock production. And for that, I sometimes use insights from this book as well.
Ah, very interesting. Yeah, in animal production, I think that sounds like it would be useful to read and to gather some thoughts on how to approach, you know, those types of groups and discussions. Because, you know, I grew up on a farm, and farming practices in my mind are completely different than some people that I have gotten to know. And that's been, you know, both challenging but thought-provoking for me, and very, very insightful.
Yeah, and it's also the other way around. Because what I always tell also the students is that if we compare the year 1950, when there were 30% of the people living in the cities and 70% in the countryside, in 2050, it will be the opposite. So 70% of the people are living in the cities and 30% in the countryside. So the affinity that people have with farming practices is getting completely different. Especially if you then also consider that the global population in this period of time in 100 years has increased from 2.6 to 9.7 billion people, so it means that even more people are living in the cities compared to the countryside.
Yeah, and so education and transparency, in my mind, are two key areas of that, right? To make sure that you know, people understand the importance of agriculture. For sure. So the last one is a little bit more about people, I guess. And so share an attribute or characteristic that you feel would set a successful person apart from others.
Well, what I very much appreciate in people I work with, both in the professional environment but also in university, is people who are creative and proactive. I always try to stimulate that as well, because no matter what kind of bumpy road you experience, I think it's always very important to stimulate creativity and to think the other way around. To look for solutions.
Yeah, great. Well, I think you're a good example of that in all your area of expertise. And it just sounds like you're doing some really good things in terms of, you know, helping animal production face some of the challenges. So I appreciate you taking time today and visiting with me. Again, listeners, if you have a question or a comment for our guest today, Joost Vandenborne, he would, I'm sure, reply back. Please give us a like on your platform. And again, this is the Swinet podcast show, and I really appreciate your time today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Looking to elevate your brand and captivate audiences through the power of podcasting? Look no further. Introducing the custom podcast brought to you by Wisemetics, where we take care of the behind the scenes so that you can focus on what truly matters. Podcasting has become an invaluable tool for brand awareness, but let's face it, putting it into practice can be a daunting task. It's incredibly time consuming and requires technical know-how. But don't worry, we've got you covered. With our experienced team at the helm, we'll handle the operational aspects so you can channel your energy into what your company does best. Are you ready to unleash the podcasting potential of your company? Schedule a call with one of our specialists today at the link in the bottom of this episode. You'll also receive a free podcast strategy consult tailored to the unique needs and goals of your business.